This podcast was recorded on Thursday, February 25th, 2021. Please note that immigration climate remains fluid. Some information may have changed since the recording of this podcast.
Welcome to Tech San Diego Spotlight. I'm Kevin Carroll, the Executive Director of Tech San Diego. I'm coming here from the remote temporary headquarters of Tech San Diego and technology's perfect climate in sunny Rancho Penasquitos. This is going to be messy today. You know, we're going to be talking about immigration and visas, and I've had a lot of people ask what's going on, what's going to happen, what's going on. And, you know, we have a new administration, we have new policies, we have reversals, we have new initiatives. Man, do we have a lot of stuff. And so the good news is we have one of the global experts on immigration right here in sunny San Diego, Corinne Winger. Corinne, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
So I'm going to introduce Corinne just really quickly. She's a corporate immigration counsel to a wide range of clients from startup industry leaders to Fortune 500 corporations in varying industries, counseling them on all aspects of employment-based U.S. immigration, regulation, policy changes, compliance. She advises clients on due diligence and immigration impact in the event of corporate restructuring, M&A transactions, or reduction in force situations. She also partners with clients in managing their contingent workforce with respect to immigration compliance and brand protection. But what you need to know is Corinne's the expert. And so I've known her for a long time. Whenever I've needed to know anything about immigration, we've had Tech San Diego members. She is always the first phone call. So Corinne, I set up kind of my intro. I said about how messy this is going to be. And, you know, we've got a new administration. We have a past administration to say the previous administration was unfriendly to immigration would be an understatement. But for the purposes of this discussion, we're really talking about high-tech, highly skilled immigration. So tell us a little bit about what's going on.
Sure. Immigration continues to be very fluid. And we'll continue to see some changes in the horizon. The good news, I think, with a Biden administration and what we can glean from his campaign platform and certainly actions that he's taken in the last month or so in office is immigration will be a focal point of this administration. And right out of the gate, we certainly noticed a shift from the prior administration as approach. With the Biden administration largely focusing on humanitarian action, right? So on day one, President Biden issued a proclamation ending the discriminatory entry ban to the U.S. That included the Muslim ban, if you recall, that was actually put in place by Trump a day or two into his administration. We've seen other executive action put in place by Biden to overturn some of the Trump policies. And I think this, you know, obviously we'll dive into some of those and kind of talk about what to expect next. But really the message and for practitioners, for employers who hire foreign nationals, for foreign nationals wanting to immigrate to the U.S., it really sets a great tone. It sets a tone that we're pro-immigration. We're inviting immigrants back to the U.S. We are supporting immigration. Immigration is good for the economy. And so there's a bit of a sigh of relief, a little bit hopeful that will provide a more stable and predictable climate, which a lot of employers in the tech space certainly will appreciate. But let's take a look at some of the immediate actions that have been taken place right out of the gate. So Biden's put in place a program to preserve and fortify DACA. Those are our Dreamers. He's issued a memorandum for the agencies to review the immigration enforcement policies. That's ICE. He's put a task force in place with interagency stakeholders to address the reunification of families. That was a big issue, certainly in our border region, with children being separated from families. And I think just yesterday in the news, there was mention that some parents had been reunited with their children. He also rescinded the migration protection protocols, or the Remain in Mexico order, that had been put in place by Trump, and that had triggered a lot of asylum seekers to actually stay in Mexico while their asylum case was awaiting to be heard in the court. So that's been rescinded, and we're starting to hear of asylum seekers being able to come into the United States. So there's this commitment to legal immigration, humanitarian efforts, which is great to see. There was another executive order on February 2nd where Biden tasked the agencies to really review the regulations and policies put in place under Trump that may have set barriers to legal immigration, right? And what's interesting here as well, we kind of try to, glean from any of these executive orders what might come into the future with this administration. The title of that executive order, I think, embodies his philosophy and the approach that the administration's going to take vis-a-vis immigration. It's entitled Restoring Faith in Our Legal Immigration Systems and Strengthening Integration and Inclusion Efforts for New Americans. Now, contrast that against the Trump proclamation of June 2020, which barred the entry of folks in H's, L's, J's, which certainly affected the tech industry. That proclamation was called Suspension of Entry of Immigrants and Non-Immigrants who Continue to Present a Risk to the U.S. Labor Market. So clear distinction in tone and approach. With respect to that HL travel ban, Trump had extended it through. It had expired December 31st. At the nth hour, Trump did extend it through March 31st. It's unclear whether the Biden administration will rescind it at this point, though it's unlikely that it will be extended. The green card ban portion of that, interestingly enough, was just rescinded by the White House yesterday. So who knows? Point is, things remain quite fluid. There's a lot that we have to keep an eye on, and more to come for sure.
So that was a lot of information. And I know it seems to be so fluid. So one of the primary tools for a high-skilled workforce, and you touched on it a little bit, is the H-1B visas, right? There was an annual quota. And of course, those seem to be taken up way too soon. And there was some, the previous administration really put a halt to that. So tell us about the current status of the H-1B visas. And I've also heard rumors that there's going to be some changes that might be positive in terms of the availability of those. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with H-1B visas.
Sure. Yeah, so the H-1B visas. So what's interesting is the Trump administration did leave a few items behind that the Biden administration is going to have to address and certainly will have to keep an eye on. So there was essentially, just to kind of simplify it as best as I can, there were essentially three regulations that were proposed. One was a regulation to change the H-1B category and eligibility requirement as a whole. That was never actually published. They were proposed, but never published. Then there were regulations to change the Department of Labor Wage Survey Leveling Guide, as well as regulations to change the way that the H-1B lottery process was handled. Both of those regulations were published, but they had not yet taken effect. And so we're going to focus on those two, because while the Biden administration may not agree with those regulations, a new administration can't just yank a regulation simply because they don't like it. They have to follow the rulemaking process. And so for those two regulations, Biden issued a recommendation to the agencies that for those regulations that have been published but that had not taken effect yet, so that's our lottery or H-1B cap regulations and the Department of Labor wage regulations, to have the agency p- put a pause on those for 60 days and to allow for further review. So that was important. And that's in fact what they've done. So let's take a look at the H-1B cap regulation and what those rules proposed. And because of course, the cap season for those of those employers who file H-1Bs for the first time for employees, they would know that the application process begins next month with a registration, and then the lottery selection happens. So the rule would have amended the selection process from a random selection that's been in place for many years to a wage-based selection, giving preference to the highest salaries offered. And, you know, as you can imagine, this could have been very problematic for smaller entities, startups that might be in the beginning stages of funding, or for entry-level jobs and perhaps shutting out those employers and potentially recent grads as part of the talent pool. So this has been put on hold. And because, you know, the 60 days would have taken us past the cap season, this has been tabled for the end of the year, but certainly could resurface for next year. So something that we need to keep an eye on. Of course, between now and then, and what we've certainly learned with regulations in last year, that these can be challenged, right? They can be challenged in court. And so that could still happen. And so something that we continue to watch carefully. For this year, registration does open up March 9th. Selection will happen electronically, randomly, as it has in the past. Employers will be notified end of March, and then will be given the opportunity to file in the following 2.5 months or so. So good news there. At least that's still status quo for that.
Kareen, one of the things that I've talked to you about is there's this perception that H-1B visas are only good for large companies because they have the resources to do it. I have seen a little bit of a change in that. Tell us a little bit about how, you know, are there plans to make it more accessible to small, mid-sized companies? Will there be set-asides for small business? I know one of the issues in the past is a lot of the really big IT consulting firms would seem to grab all those H-1B visas. Is any of those, has anyone took a look at those practices and figured out ways where they can make it available to a broader swath of the technology community?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's a couple of issues there. And certainly that we can, you know, that the Trump administration, I think, was trying to address in part, and certainly, you know, might still be part of the discussion under the Biden administration, right? While Biden is pro-immigration, he certainly has the ear of pro-labor organizations as well, right? So we have to kind of keep that in the background. But when we look at, so H-1Bs are available, certainly for any size company. But when we start kind of looking at, for example, the wage survey, right? And going back to that DOL, Department of Labor wage rule, that's proposed, that was published, not taking effect yet. It's been postponed to possibly take effect in July, where the wage levels would increase. And so this could be problematic across the board, quite frankly, because it doesn't necessarily currently align well with employer, the market, right? And so certainly if wage levels do increase for H-1Bs, that's going to obviously impact the compensation across the board. But for smaller companies, that may not be feasible. They might not have that funding to meet those wage levels. And so they may be limited in sponsoring recent graduates, right? So that's one aspect. The other aspect is this H-1B eligibility regulation that Trump administration had drafted, not yet published. So it kind of went by the wayside, but that was to strengthen the H-1B program. And in part, it addressed H-1B petitioners who placed H-1B employees at client sites and would impose additional obligations to that host company, for example. So I think in the IT consulting space, that might be a situation where it might be a way, it would have been a way, I think, for the Trump administration to perhaps impose additional obligations in those situations. Again, because it wasn't published and or because it didn't take effect, the rule was never published, excuse me. So it that went by the wayside. It doesn't mean, though, that it can't be revisited, right? And when we look at Biden's plan overall for his immigration plan, more comprehensive immigration approach, there's going to be some negotiations and concessions that he's going to have to make along the way to get bipartisan support, right? And so this could very well be, the H-1B could very well be an area where we still see some changes in the future. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. And certainly, I think from a tech standpoint, tech community standpoint, I think advocacy efforts will be important. The good news is, unlike the prior administration, Biden is open to hearing from stakeholders in the community. He has this view that, yes, immigration fuels our economy, but he's going to have to balance that out, right, with the labor organizations.
I think you're right. I think there are going to be competing, but I think the fact that they're listening and they understand, you know, how foreign talent drives innovation. You know, I wrote an op-ed for the UT on how it really enriches everything, not only financially and economically, but even culturally, how that enriches of our community having foreign talent, and, you know, dispelling this myth that we're trying to bring cheap foreign labor over, which it's oftentimes a lot more expensive to have an H-1B visa than it would be to hire domestically. And certainly if we had enough, you know, of that talent domestically, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation. And so, but I think you're right. I think they're going to have to balance it off, but it's just, it's nice to see that they're listening. And so it will be interesting to go see what happens on the tech space. You know, the green cards, shifting gears a little bit, you know, the green cards is still an issue. There's been such a backlog, and confusion. How do you think, is that going to get better? Is it going to get worse? Is it going to go through, a little bit of restructuring? What do you see in the just issuing green cards?
So backlogs in general, certainly over the last year because of the pandemic and because of staffing limitations at USCIS, the agency that kind of processes these, it's been an issue. I mean, it's been an issue across the board where you have folks that are having to be put on an unpaid leave of absence because their work authorization document didn't arrive in time and so on. On the green card side, just by way of background, there's a quota every fiscal year, and it's based on employment. There's employment-based categories and then family-based categories. It's further divided by country of birth, and the countries where the demand is higher, they have their own queue, and then there's a catch-all category. Interestingly, last year, because of these travel bans, on the green card side, where normally folks would get a green card at the consulate and enter as green card holders, but because of that travel ban, all of a sudden that created a surplus, if you will, of green card numbers for the end of that fiscal year. And so we did see in October and November, those unused numbers kind of trickle down to the employment-based categories. It allowed people to file at least that green card application, but it was a temporary fix because now they're stuck still in the queue and so on. So Biden actually had introduced in the last 30 days, introduced a draft proposal of an immigration bill. And in that, while It does not contain too many provisions on employment-based immigration. He does speak about backlogs and provides some indications of how perhaps we would be able to reduce the backlog. So some of the provisions and proposals would include recapturing any unused numbers from prior fiscal years, exempting in the quota count.
So those will carry forward. So if we didn't use them last year, those will be able to carry forward.
So yeah.
Well, that should be good news for recent college grads.
Right. Yeah. So if that were possible, it'd be a matter of kind of calculating, you know, it's a supply and demand situation. And every member of the family counts against the quota, which is interesting because in his bill, you know, that would have been an easy exemption and it's omitted from the bill. Now it's a draft. So who knows, might still be put in there. But that would have been a nice one to exclude dependent spouses, dependent children from the count and just kind of do it as a family unit, right?
That'd be better. You don't want a situation where good news, you got a job in the U.S., bad news, you have to leave your family at home.
Right. Only three of you get it, not the other two. Yeah, exactly. Speaking of grads, though, he does propose an exemption to the green card quota for U.S. graduates who have a PhD in STEM. So that would be, you know, a good proposal there. He does not increase the quota, and he does provide provisions in there, which is interesting. This is the first time we've seen this, where there would be a mechanism by which the availability of the quota could be adjusted dependent on economic downturn, for example. So that's an interesting approach. Because of course, folks are here already working in a job, and so how would that play out?
Yeah, we're getting, you know, we're getting through our Talent Pulse monthly survey of jobs and some other things. We're getting some pretty clear signals that the talent wars are really going to start heating up again, if they haven't already. And so, you know, pegging it to an unemployment rate may alleviate some of the concerns that, you know, some of our legislators have on that. So one of the other issues is this idea of the Dreamers Act. Just really quick, and DACA, what might this mean for high tech and as part of an overall reform bill, I guess?
The good news is in the bill, there was a proposal for a path to green cards, so permanent residency and citizenship for DACA recipients. So in addition to preserving the DACA program, kind of providing for a long-term path. So for employers, you know, this could broaden the talent pool, obviously available to them, and certainly provide more stability, not only for them, but their workforce who are dreamers, right? Because otherwise you're kind of at the mercy of having to, you know, renew and the survival of the program, which as we saw could change with a change in administration. So the other positive thing here is this is a program that has had bipartisan support in the past. So, you know, as we look at the overall proposed immigration bill, it's going to have to be carved out, right? And hopefully this is one that they could carve out pretty quickly and pass through while everything else kind of is up for debate. But it'll be a true test for bipartisan action, certainly. But positive, you know, we're hopeful that this will work out.
It's so much information, Corinne, and things are changing. So, I mean, by the time we get off the phone here, something's going to change, right? And so it really is amazing how you're able to keep up. So, you know, I have a few law firms that are members of Tech San Diego, and I refer people to them all the time. But one of the things, and I'm going to, I mean, my guests on TSD are never, you know, pitching their services, but I want to do this for myself to understand, you know, the benefits of hiring. And I mean, Fraggleman, that's what they do, right? It's not IP and all these other things. And, oh, we also do immigration. It's what you guys do and what you're known for. So, you know, what are the benefits of hiring an immigration focused law firm versus, you know, using your current law firm?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I'm sure, you know, I'm sure there are benefits for the multidisciplinary, firm approach. But, you know, if a firm like ours, right, focuses on one area of practice, all of its resources, all of its expertise, it's on that, right? There's no competing interest in other areas of practice. And so, you know, if I look at our firm, you know, we started in 1951. We were a domestic practice in the U.S., and now we're a worldwide organization with a global footprint in over 110 countries. Our focus has always been immigration. And we've grown with our clients as their so that we can support their global mobility efforts, their expansion in various markets. But what it's allowed us to do is truly be their strategic business partner, right? In managing their program, whether it's a talent pool of one foreign national employee or thousands, right? And when I look at our internal firm resources that we've really had to leverage, certainly in a year like last year where things were changing, I think every day, every other day, there was something new, to have our knowledge group dedicated to just immigration, they're on top of everything that's happening. They're able to disseminate the information. We're able to get client educated on the topic. We've got a government strategies and litigation team, again, solely dedicated on immigration issues. And we've had to file suit against the government a few times because they were clearly wrong in some of their decision. Even our technology lab in Pittsburgh, it's all driven on, with an immigration focus on how we can provide that cutting edge, you know, service model to our clients, no matter the size. And that's another thing that's, I think, important when you're focusing only on immigration. You're able to identify trends early on. And for us, because we represent so many, you know, large multinational companies, we're able to benchmark for best practices. And so our clients, you know, look to us for advice, for strategic advice, proactive advice. And so when you have policy changes or trends that change on the dime, as practitioners, I think we have to be able to identify those quickly to benefit our clients.
Yeah. And I think, Corinne, I think for a lot of executives who are busy, right? There's a learning curve on this, right? And so, you know, working with someone who just does immigration is going to flatten that learning curve a lot, right? And you know, with due respect to some of my other you know law firms that I know, it's going to be more efficient and just more specialized. And so, you know, I would encourage people to, you know, if you're going to have a foreign talent in your workforce, to engage, you know, at least here locally, engage Fragomen. I've looked at your list of clients and it's like the who's who, right? And so in Tech San Diego, we have a lot of small, mid-sized companies. So are you willing to take on smaller companies? Tell us about, I assume you are, but just to clarify, are you accepting clients and how would someone get a hold of you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we represent, clients really ranging from the individual to Fortune 500 companies. So maybe I can give you, and there's benefits even to, because I hear that a lot, right? I hear, oh, Fragomen, you're too big for me or I'm too small for you. But in fact, the fact that we do represent and process a high volume of cases, that does benefit the small client as well, because they're able to leverage the best practices and in our resources, right? So for smaller clients who may not have a formal immigration or mobility program, this is to their advantage. They need us. It's almost like we're the outside counsel because they're not going to think of the issues because they haven't seen it, right? And rightly so. They might see it more as a transaction. Okay, I got to fill out a form. I send out a few things and then we're done. but they could omit a lot of the compliance piece, the due diligence piece that's so critical. So to give you some ideas and the listeners some ideas of, you know, what our client base might look like, you know, it might be a high net worth individual who wants to invest in a business in the U.S. or maybe invest in a program to get a green card. We might represent scholars who want to self-petition for the green card because they haven't found a company perhaps to sponsor them. And that might, depending on how that wage rule plays out, we might see more of that. Small businesses may come to us because for the first time they have, you know, they hired a student, they came in with their work permit, they didn't really have much to do other than conduct their I-9, but then that work permit's about to expire, now what, right? And so they reach out to us. And sometimes it's the employee that reaches out to us, right? Because they, you know, they're working closely with the COO or the CTO, and they're like, we don't know what to do. So sometimes that's how we get engaged. And then for some companies, maybe they reach out to us in limited scope. You know, maybe they already have a current provider, but they need, you know, consultative advice. Perhaps there's a complex strategy situation, emerges an acquisition, a corporate restructure, I-9 compliance. We saw a lot of that last year with everybody moving remote. Companies wanted to know how to handle their I-9s virtually. And so at first glance, you see, oh, well, you know, the government's allowing us to do these remotely. So that's how what people are going to do. But it's short-sighted because the minute that no longer is available, there's going to be some, you know, the in-person I-9s that need to be redone. And so that's where we come in, right? It's that strategic advice, business partnering, giving all the information to our clients so that they can make the right decision going forward to stay compliant.
Kareen, this should probably be a three-hour podcast, but with tech folks and their attention deficit disorders, it would be kind of tough to keep them on. So I can't believe in the course of 40 minutes or so, geez, we've gone through H-1B visas, we've gone through green cards, we've gone through DACA, we've gone through a whole host of things. I know it was just a sliver of it, but my hope is that we brought to light some of what's going on. It's changing every day. Get a professional, get someone like Kareen, call Fragoman, they'll help you out. But make sure you get some advice and guidance on this. It's so complicated and it's so fluid. Kareen's part of the Tech San Diego Network, and we'll be bringing her in again for a lot of other things, I'm sure. Kareen, but is there any kind of broad things that you don't think we covered in this podcast that maybe you'd like to chat about?
I think the only thing I would just put out there is international travel is still... remains quite fluid as far as coming back to the U.S. So definitely check in on the situation of where you're going from a COVID restriction, whether it's a quarantine restriction, a vaccine requirement, if you need a visa to come back, definitely reach out to an immigration professional to find out what it's like in that jurisdiction. Are consulates open? How long is it going to take? On our website, we do have a COVID microsite available to the public that is updated on a daily basis and really covers the whole world. So I really recommend folks looking into that before traveling, because we've had people think that they, you know, the world is opening up again, only to find out that at the consulates, it's still quite problematic to get a visa stamp to come back.
Yeah, that's important as company looks to ramp up some of their travel and sales and marketing and visits and everything else. So, Kareen, thank you for spending time. I know you're very busy, so for you to carve out the time, we very much appreciate it. It was a lot of information in a short amount of time, so I appreciate you kind of bringing everything together in such a short amount of time.
It's my pleasure anytime.
Okay, Kareen, thanks. This is Kevin Carroll from Tech San Diego. You can always go to techsd.org to find out what's going on at Tech San Diego. And we will end this podcast and we will see you the next time. See you later.
TSD Spotlight is a Tech San Diego production recorded remotely in San Diego, California. Executive producers are Sarah Spiva and Kevin Carroll. All of Tech San Diego's podcast productions are edited by Andrew Sims of Hypable Impact. Tech San Diego would like to thank Corinne Wanger of Fragoman for joining us today. To learn more about our guest and find more immigration resources, visit www.fragoman.com. To learn more about Tech San Diego, visit www.techsandiego.org.